That time again, kids. I'm TC Downey, and with me on the air is Jeanette. Jeanette, how are you today?
I'm good. How's everybody doing?
Everybody, I think, at this point is just me and you. It looks like everybody must be killing their turkeys right now and stuffing their asses.
Oh, the ones at Sin Channel will show up 10 minutes late, like always.
Right on. Yeah, tomorrow's Thanksgiving. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and it's been such a weird year, you know. I was thinking about that today, actually. I was like, I'm coming up on having been at Sin for a year now. And that's kind of a significant anniversary in a way for me, because I didn't do the online thing ever, really, until I joined Sin.
Right on. Now you're a regular e-user.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was, you know, like Zach talked about, I was like, the internet's a phase or a trend. And then I started poking around and reading stuff, but I never joined anything. I was like, well, I don't want to do that. And then on the spur of the moment, I wound up joining Sin. So, yeah, I've been... Actually, it's coming up on a year now where I've been, like, actually participating in the internet. Kind of a weird thing.
Right,
yeah. I joined the technological age, finally.
Yeah, and a lot of good things have come because of it, so.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm. That was the other thing I was thinking about, too, was, like, where I was when I started and where I've progressed to, and I was like, that's a pretty big difference. I pulled up some of my first blogs that I ever wrote. I was like, oh, man, ooh, oh, that's terrible. I can't believe they didn't eat you alive, you know? And then I was remembering, I was like, I think they sort of did, and I just, like, kept standing up after getting punched for several months is what happened there.
Right. Well, I mean, I've admittedly always liked you. I thought your, you know, thinking process was good. Just some of your conclusions weren't as developed as they are now. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, no, I would definitely say that. I'm thrilled at how far I've come. Yeah. And I don't know. I enjoy the internet. So go figure. I didn't realize that would happen either. And I didn't realize, I don't know, like, I have some really good friends and stuff that I've met through doing that. You know, I never realized what an asset that could actually be.
Yeah. It's interesting to actually be able to maintain a friendship with somebody for a long period of time living in, I don't know, completely different zip codes, or even more bizarrely when you develop friendships with people who are on the other side of the world.
Yeah, exactly. It's been there's some people that, you know, I'm really friendly with and really close to. And the other thing, too, is that at least for me, and I don't know, maybe this is like a Southern girl thing, but, like, I really never thought about the rest of the world, like their currency and stuff or time zones or, I don't know, it's like nothing existed outside of America for me mentally. So that's been good, too, because I actually, I don't know, it's like I kind of get that now, like, you know, oh, yeah, well, they're on the other side of the world, so everything's different there.
Right. Everything's different, but yet there maintains this kind of net of similarity that you can both reference from.
Mm-hmm.
Not that in particular, if no other construct is the internet itself. So,
yeah.
I think it's an absolutely fabulous thing that you're able to actually globalize and kind of centralize information and provide the best possible information. You know, there are people that will come along and destroy your shit every day of the week. It doesn't matter which avenue you really take. If you're, you know, just interested in philosophy, there's some really big dogs in philosophy running around the internet.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular is somebody's YouTube channel I've been subscribed to for a while, and I really kind of watch this guy with amazement because he's just so concise and sharp with his logic. The channel Sisyphus Redeemed. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
Yeah, no, I don't do YouTube much.
All right. Well, I mean, this guy's just philosophically, he's amazing. He draws some really strong connections from things, and he does it in a very creative manner, which, of course, for me, that's, you know, really piques my mind. I'm just one of those people that I like to see distortions of truth, and them still hold true. When you can sit and philosophize something and, you know, hold it at a high enough standard that it's hard to knock down, that means you understand something very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll have to check it out. I'll have to go over there and check it out. I haven't watched Jason King's videos in a while or anybody else. If I need to get over to YouTube and actually do that, I need to catch up.
Yeah. But Jason's only done, I don't know, it seems like only two actually really good videos over the past 6 months. So, I mean, the other ones were okay. But one of them's sort of ridiculously long, and it's done that way on purpose.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if it's a genius.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say the last one I saw of his was his on Venger, that, or where he was doing that, where he's declaring himself an epistemist or something. That's the last one I saw. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got quite a few videos to watch then, probably about 6 hours worth.
Yep.
Yeah. So, last week we left off, and I forget what topic we put up, we were going
to
do.
You said you just wanted to keep it open discussion the next couple weeks.
Oh, excellent, good.
World.
Then I knew I would kind of be scatterbrained.
Well, yeah, it's the day before Thanksgiving. This is always a crazy time of year for everybody.
Today's definitely a pressing day in general. So.
Yeah, it's one of those where I'm actually not doing anything this year, which is weird. I'm protesting, actually, like the commercialization of the holiday. I'm not doing anything. It's going to be a normal day. Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is actually going to go the way I planned, because, like, my mother-in-law is already just, like, she's utterly distraught because we're not doing anything. My mother cried on the phone when I told her I was not celebrating Thanksgiving because, and I told her this, but because I no longer support what the U.S. stands for. So I'm not going to celebrate this holiday. Yeah. I got hit with a pretty big boom there. I'm an unpatriotic bitch. Yeah. That was, yeah. But no, yeah. I'm not doing anything this year. I've done, you know, we went to the in-laws most years, and then I've volunteered and fed the homeless and done all kinds of stuff, and no, I'm not doing anything.
Right on. Well, I mean, yeah, I understand what you mean there, definitely. And people, I don't know, I don't necessarily think that it's a day that we need to take to celebrate fucking, you know, whatever this country was founded on or whatever. I mean, honestly, the way I kind of look at it and why I do it is because I believe in a lot of the core principles that were here when this place was first founded. And
yeah.
I don't know, I guess there's this sort of hopeless romantic hanging out in the back going, you know, I'd love to see something like that come about again.
I would too. We talked about that a little bit last week. I'd like to see the United States return to that, you know, these individual states. And I mean, they were different. They were, you know, there were big differences between the states at first. There was a little bit of, you know, they could do their own thing, and it's not the same anymore. I'd like to see it return to that too, personally. But I'm sort of, I don't know. Honestly, I'm kind of depressed because it's really starting to set in that, it can't be fixed, you know. Like, I kind of like the founding principles enough that I want it to be able to be fixed. And it's really starting to sort of sink in that, no, you can't fix it anymore. It's broken, you know. It has to be torn down and then done again.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all, as you know. It's just, for me, it's a celebration of the principles. That's really what it is. One of those things is coming together with people in your family. I personally, I'm not going to say that, blood should mean something to everybody just because it's blood. But for me, my blood does mean something. So... Mm-hmm. It's just a personal choice. I happen to like my family, and despite all their little nuances, my brother and I think get into it the worst. But it is what it is, and he'll continue to bury his head up his ass, and I've just gotten used to his hair stinking like shit. So
now. My issue with my family is that my immediate blood family, like my sister and my mother, and are worthless. I mean, it's like gross. I mean, it's that bad. It's always been that bad. And I've had to actually struggle quite a bit because I'm very loyal to my people. And it actually has taken a lot for me to finally go, you know what? They don't, there's too much difference. They only call you for money, all these things. It's time to just let it go, which has been kind of it's been hard, but it's something that at this point I sort of have to do because it's they're drained. I mean, they're classic psychic vampires under that Levian definition. I mean, it's bad. And I just decided, and I've been working on that the past few months where it's like, I'm cutting them out of my life because I can't deal with it anymore. And my husband's family, they're doing their thing on Saturday, but I'm not going to it either. But the kids will be going to that. They're doing it on Saturday because a bunch of people are working and all this other stuff. So.
Right on. Well, depending on what social class your family's in, everybody could be working. So.
Mm-hmm. It's a lack of want to, and my sister in a way is, I don't know how to explain it, she's younger than me, so she pisses me off because I love her to pieces and I practically raised her, but she pisses me off because it's like the exact opposite of me in pretty much every way, shape, and form, and we've always been that way. And she just doesn't want to. And she says things that just make me really, really mad. Like, why would I go to work when I only have to pay $16 a month for rent?
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't pay $16 a month for rent, That's her, have a baby, have a raise kind of mentality that she has. And she's always had that, even when she was little, she wanted a handout, Now she's an adult and it's just, that's what she does, And my mother is the same way. And then I've fought like tooth and nail to get out of it, which is why... selling the house and all that stuff was so hard on me, actually, is because those were my marks of I get it and I'm better than them, kind of thing, So to actually cut that out, to live as cheaply as possible, to hit my next goal, actually, in a way, kind of sucks for me psychologically because it's going back, It's kind of like I'm back home. It's not fun, but I think it's actually going to be good at the end of the day because my standard for success does not need to be that, the mundane standard of success. I need to figure out what that is for myself.
Right on. Well, I mean, I have a couple of interesting, viewpoints on that whole bit. And the one side of it, I kind of look at it as holding a trophy or keeping a trophy kind of locks you into place. You know, you can constantly point back and relive the glory days through that rather than picking up the ball and running, you know, across the goal line again and some different expression. I've always personally felt that the most important part of any accomplishment made is the praxis or the gnosis that you gain by actually making it through it to get to the other side, that experience. That's the most valuable thing. That's a trophy you can carry with you forever. And
yeah.
It doesn't take up space in your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that I worked and I did a lot of really terrible shit to actually get there at the end of the day. But it was my goal from the time I was a little kid, you know, like that's what I did. Like my intent and focus was always on getting out of poverty, getting out of the situation that I was raised in and never returning to it. And, you know,
right.
I dropped out of school and had a baby and I still did it, you know, it wasn't easy and, you know, but once I got it, you know, and that was, you know, we hadn't actually owned the house long when I started actually participating in sin. It was like I had done it and I was, and yes, I did it, but like as soon as it was done, I was absolutely miserable.
Right,
but
because
just,
now you got the problem of coming up with the next high.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I was absolutely miserable, so yeah. And that's the thing is that I'm starting to realize that too, is that I'm kind of like an experience junkie. Is that like, if I'm not doing something that's like, I don't know, out there or crazy or kind of shaking my world up to see like, you know, what falls away and does it, I'm really, it really, really starts making me feel kind of, I don't know, I start feeling like I'm not going anywhere. And I start looking for the next thing immediately. You know, like, and that was the thing is that after we bought the house, then I did the weight thing. Well, once that was done, do you see what I'm saying? Those were like my two biggest goals. So then it's like, okay, well, if you did all that, well, what are you going to do now? You know, and that's been my biggest, that was my biggest sticking point and why I've had trouble progressing is because it was kind of like, well, you did all that, yay, now what? So, yeah, it's been like, yeah, I'm just going to push to the next thing because, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to be the kind of person that gets, like, satisfied either. That's the other thing I'm starting to realize. There's no, I'm never satisfied. As soon as I get something, it's not enough or I want it to be different or, well, I didn't want that to begin with. I want something different.
Right on. Well, I mean, my mom always said, and I really believe that if you're not, if it's not hard, you're not climbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and if it starts to hurt, it means you're sliding down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. For me, it's always been the same kind of thing. It's constantly challenging myself. I've gone so far as to kind of redefine my entire existence on a what I do level. And
mm-hmm.
It's a constant redefinition. So, I mean,
oh, that's right.
It's not
you're
like
you're going back to school, aren't you? Aren't you going back to school now?
Yeah,
it?
Actually, I'm getting ready to. It's not quite yet, but it's been approved. It's paid for. I'm just waiting on my start date. But yeah, I'm going back to school. I'm going to try to create things for a living, which is kind of funny because up until now, all I've ever really participated in is destroying things or making them go boom.
So, I was going to say, you've been blowing stuff up for a long time now. Yeah.
Yes, I have.
I think that'll be good. Yeah, that makes me happy. Yeah.
So that should be really cool, and it's a career that I can, you know, kind of take pride in. It's a craft, so not something that everybody can do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's something that, and I don't know. It's I was telling my husband. I said my biggest issue and problem is that I have some kind of innate personality trait that I'm never satisfied. And he said to me, that personality trait is actually why I married you. He said, I knew that you would keep me motivated to do something else all the time.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
So, what I'm thinking on this, actually, I just totally derailed myself saying that. Oh, it's been a hell of a day. I did about 6 hours in a car, and I just got out of it about an hour ago. The good news is I got to get my kid, and I have him through Thanksgiving, so that's always cool.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, we can talk about your blog. Oh, well, not blog. Your page on your on Imminent Mind that you just did.
Oh, the Dark Horse? Yeah, I'd be happy to discuss that. Is there anything in particular you wanted to touch on?
I really enjoyed it. I liked the way that you kind of turned Gertrude's thing on the Sly Man and turned it into something. I don't know. It felt like it went where it had always, your interpretation of it had always been sinister. It went a lot darker, which I really, really enjoyed.
Oh, the fact that it's a lot darker?
Yeah.
That's something I've honestly been ironing out in my own personal philosophy for a couple of years. You know, I've always kind of held this, I don't know, the stuff that I'm writing about is usually a few shades lighter, if I can use that as the dichotomy to describe what we're talking about, than what I actually practice. I do it because I don't believe that you have to go as deep in as I do, but it's just how I do things. It's why there's 15 million posts on my computer that haven't been finished, why there's, you know, 20 or 30 paintings that are still in the process of happening. It's just the way that I work. I'm very meticulous about it, and I come to a point where I need to stop, step back, and reconsider my argument or whatever I'm doing and then go back to it. So, I mean, that kind of discipline and thinking is not always necessary. You shouldn't have to reexamine something every time you hit a comfortable resting point.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so it's kind of been a long time and coming thing. It was my whole idea when I started off working with the Cthulhu cult in the first place. My thoughts were, what could be more monstrous than Cthulhu? What could be more evil?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cthulhu is not just, the whole bit about Cthulhu was that he's not just coming back to torture and kill, but to teach mankind new ways of torturing, of being tortured and killed. You know, it's that same, the Hellraiser principle. I mean, Pinhead kind of had the same theory. You know, to show you new levels of pain.
Well, and I think that relates very well to the idea of learning through adversity, just on us in a symbolic manner. You know, is that like, if you think it's hard, you know, you're going to have to go do something harder next. You know, I've always sort of thought that the Earth, this planet, is hell in a very definable way. You know, is that, you know, when you look at it from the religious perspective, well, this is the place where you're, you know, it's not really a fun, you know, environment and planet to be on. It's not that it's not beautiful. It's just that there's something very brutal to this planet.
Absolutely. That entire existence from the south up is brutal. Everything's cannibalizing everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
it's a struggle for resource. It's a struggle for, you know, existence, continuance. Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, that's where we would learn. You know, it was something I was trying to convey through the Dark Horse. And it's something that King talks about. It's something everybody at some point who has, I don't know, the theory of those harder problems lined up in this specific aspect, that it is that actual adversity or that advancement against that animates us. I mean, a perfect example of this is the Kali Shiva thing. You know, Shiva's lying, you know, he's lying down and he's still, he's sediment. And Kali is dancing on top of him. Well, dancing with one foot on top of him, rather. So she's pressed up firmly against him. It's something I've batted back and forth, just trying to describe by expressing that every one of our senses is cued by an interaction with something, but more of like a collision. Like for instance, when you look with your eyes, the light is actually hitting into your eye. And it's coming up against everything, and when it hits up against those nerves, then you get the signal and you see what's going on. So the light's coming forward at you, it's actually coming in an exact opposite direction to you. And so
yeah,
there's just that opposite pull. When you smell
something.
Oh, go ahead. No, go, please.
Oh, I was going to say, no, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's something that's very difficult to describe. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, I can, it's like it's wordless, but I know, but I can sort of, I don't know, smell exactly what you're stomping on it. I don't know, it reminds me of, you know, when you have a child, like, and you're the woman, and you actually go through the childbirth, it's painted as this kind of, you know, oh, life, and, you know, everything's all great and perfect. But it's actually a rather horrible experience to go through. I mean, it's bloody, and it's painful, and it's, you know, it's tear-ridden. And, you know, and then when the baby's first born, it's the same thing. It's like being psychologically tortured to be programmed to become a parent, which is really what I believe that the kid getting up every 3 hours programs you to do, is realize that you now have to sort of subjugate yourself in a way to the child to get it to the point where it will survive, you know, on its own in a palatable way. But yeah, no, I've always thought that, like, you know, like what you're talking about, it reminds me of children and childbirth in a way. I like I said, I don't think I'm communicating it very well.
I think you're doing just fine, actually, because it's in everything. That old expression, there's no pain, no pain, no gain. That's the old expression. And it goes in every which way. I mean, why do we feel, I mean, that sensation that tells us breeze is blowing across our arm is the very sensation that's amplified 1,000 times when your skin's burnt.
Yep.
You know, it is a pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that way for every one of your senses that you experience them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a sound when it's too loud, it hurts your ears. But when it's the right level, it can be soothing, comfortable.
Yeah. Oh,
so
no, It's like everything that you experience is sort of an invasion on the self somehow. It's like I wouldn't really call it an attack, but in a way it is. Like you said, it's a collision, you know, and that's how the earth operates. It always has, you know, and people tend to sort of want to deny that. And it's, I always think it's really funny because it's so evident that, I don't know, like, it's what a nasty place to be, you know, and it's a good thing that it's that way, which is the other thing that I think that people tend to shy away from pain at the same time, which I think is something that, you know, in a way is a real mistake. You know, like, I do get it on some level, but, you know, at the same time, like, I think the things that hurt the most are always worth it the most. I mean, like, you know, take, you know, just emotional relationships. I mean, most emotional responses are based on, you know, they're based on some sort of pain.
Right on. Right on. I recently read a quote, and I'm trying to remember where it was, but the quote went something along the lines of, nothing worth having is free or is just
mm-hmm.
given.
Yep.
Who the hell said that? I'm trying to remember. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. It's something I read just recently, so it could be Sun Tzu, could be some of Anton Long's work, could be Gurdjieff,
yeah.
Could be who the hell knows.
I've heard the phrase before, but yeah, I don't know who says it, but it really is it really is very true. When me and my husband went to therapy at one point, they taught us that it was a relationship system. And this is interesting because what they said is that a marriage is like a bank account, and you make deposits and withdrawals. Issues in marriage arise when your withdrawals are more than your deposits were. Yeah, and it actually got pretty dumb pretty quickly. That's about the extent of that 6 months that was worthy of remembering, actually, because then they had, like, they gave you a banking system for your relationship, and that was the point that me and him were like, yeah, no, we're done. That's it. We're good. Thank you. Bye. You know.
Right on. Right on. But, yeah, no, I mean, that's theoretically sound. You get out what you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always think
yeah.
it's funny
yeah.
because thieves often develop themselves because they think that it's easier than having to work for it. But most people I know that are professionals at liberating stuff from other people work very hard at what they do. So it's a profession that's not any different than the others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't necessarily get something easier.
Oh no, yeah, that's certainly true, and I do think that that's a myth. Is that I think that all criminals, like, you know, work harder than, you know, a lot of working people do a lot of times, you know, like my husband had a friend that sold pills, and I mean, that involves like 12-hour drives, and, you know, he was gone for 4 days. I mean, like, it basically, he worked all the time, you know. Yeah, he made a lot more money, but I mean, there was no time that his phone wasn't ringing and he basically wasn't at work.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, and this is something that I've noticed, the drug dealer that makes a good living or makes his living off of dealing drugs,
mm-hmm.
it typically tends to have the same lifestyle as somebody who makes their living through some other means, like a CEO at a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've gone all the time, don't have time for the wife and kids, all that stuff. You know, they're constantly working. And
yep.
of course they have good money because they're always working.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, yeah, it's true, and it's actually kind of funny because I've you know, it always gets portrayed as, like, you know, these people do nothing, and I'm thinking, well, no, they work really hard to do what they do. You know, I understand that, you know, you don't want them to necessarily be doing it. You know, especially when you're referencing, like, you know, any news story or anything on this kind of stuff always portrays criminals. It's just like, you know, lazy people that lay around and collect money, and it's really not the case at all.
Right. Right. That's absolutely true. Different people
mm-hmm.
just find different ways of making their ends meet, and what I end up having a problem with is when somebody believes that they are more entitled to being able to make their ends meet than another person, that what they do is somehow more difficult. Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of different things. We could compare a U.S. soldier to a fireman. We could compare a fireman to a policeman. We could compare both of them to a politician. And there's different levels of danger and different levels of stress or whatever. You know, the military guy may, you know, get shot with a gun, but the chances are a banker is going to die of a heart attack at a younger age because of the stress he has himself under.
Well, yeah, exactly, and everything carries it. And that's the other thing, too, is that everything carries a risk. You know, even the thing is, too, like, low-paying minimum wage jobs, in a lot of ways, riskier than high-paying jobs. I mean, like, you know, like, if you take a restaurant, for example, and really look at it, it's actually a fairly dangerous, you know, profession. I mean, like, I worked at a gas station and when I was 18, and the first thing they do is explain to you what to do when you get robbed, not if. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like,
yes.
How much are you paying me again? What? Wait, the risk here is that somebody's going to stick a gun in my face. Oh, good. Good. And the funny thing is that I got robbed once, and I am a retarded person that wants to get themselves killed because it's like the world's stupidest robbery. This kid came in, this 13-year-old kid, which we couldn't tell, but he had a ski mask over his face, and he stole this jar that was collecting for St. Jude, and I don't even really remember what happened. There was a guy, and I mean, it was a big guy, too. I mean, like a Dan Dredd-sized guy standing behind him. He put his hands up and stepped back. Okay. The kid runs out of school.
Right on.
I took off running after him. Yeah. I chased him down the street and tackled him and was sitting on top of him when the police got there. It was a 13-year-old kid, and, like, I come back to the store and, like, everybody's like, what is wrong with you? You could have got killed. What if he had a gun? And I was like, and still to this day, I'm like, I have no idea why I did that or, you know, what reason. Like my manager was like, the money in the register is not worth dying over. What happens if somebody actually tries to rob you? You know what, try to wrestle the gun out of their hand? I'm like, I don't know, apparently so. And, yeah, to this day, I still don't know where that came from. It was a relatively, yeah. I was like, yeah, that's the stupid side of me that apparently wants to get killed for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a different level of risk for everything. And what I find most fascinating about it, and something I read recently that I agree with, is this life force, this resistance that we put out. I mean, I kind of picture it like this. 220 volts of electricity at a certain amperage is it's enough to fucking fry the shit out of you and leave nothing but little crispy pieces behind. That's cool, but when you plug it into something like a carnival, everything lights up and it's all moving and all that stuff. So I always kind of, in my mind, envision all of reality as being that carnival equipment, all sitting there, all lifeless, all unplugged and metal and cold and without purpose. And it isn't until you add that dangerous element, and that level of danger is something that you can ultimately harness. When that dangerous element is added to it, everything animates. It comes to life. It's just kind of, yeah, it automates.
I like that. That's a good analogy for it. Because yeah, it's definitely something that's difficult to explain. It's not, you know, and so much of this stuff is, you know, like I'm starting to realize that, like, I have trouble trying to put, you know, where I'm at sometimes into words, you know, especially on certain subjects. And, like, I either try and fail really bad, or I do it and then, like, I hate it. And if I post it, then everybody else loves it. But I still think, yeah, it's not right. It's like I was telling you about that essay I tried to do on the undercurrent. I still don't know what that is. It's like I told you, it's like 50 pages of watery, word soupy, weird. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I don't know. It's so bad, and there's parts of it that are really good. But yeah, it was one of those, like, yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to put this into words yet, and it's definitely something bigger than what I intended it to be. But yeah, it's just one of those moments I was like, oh yeah, no, words have failed me here utterly.
Right. The thing about words is when you're trying to express an idea that seems like it's just on the edge of your current grasp, that what I have found is just constantly trying to articulate them eventually helps you to refine. You know, I try to describe a new analogy for the same ideas every time I propose the ideas. To me, it's weak to constantly put forth the same analogy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, well, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, and that's certainly true, is that the longer that you kind of tinker with trying to put something into words, eventually you'll get there and know exactly what you mean by that really, really decisively. That's actually one of the reasons why I do write, and I write as much as I do, is that the more that I can put what I'm trying to express into words, eventually I've got it. And that's always for me is the thing, is that, like, if I can actually sit and explain it to you, I know what the fuck I'm talking about. If I can't explain it to you, then I'm still not there yet. I haven't quite grasped the concept in its entirety yet.
Right on. And the better you know something, the more chance you have to act against it or with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah.
That's actually, I think, something else I covered in the Dork course. Maybe not. It might be one of the ones I'm still working on. It's so bad. I have so many going right now. There's so many ideas, so many things that have inspired me lately. My kind of whole point of breaking out that analogy with the carnival and the electricity was the thing about electricity that I find most interesting is it can be concentrated and amplified. And when that happens, it becomes more powerful. And it's something that I've recently discovered reading a piece written by Anton Long. Let me see. See if I can figure out which one of these two it was. Yeah. I bookmarked it, and I wasn't sure when I was going to talk about it, but I wanted to eventually address it. I think it's the esoteric principle, or the esoteric philosophy of ONA. It's found on the 9angles.info website.
Mm-hmm.
But what he describes is just that very idea, that idea of the acausal happening as a direct effect of the causal. And further, if you can complexify and organize causal life, you increase your acausal energy or presence itself. So it kind of works in that same principle as electricity. And it's something that's kind of fascinated me because I've always sort of thought that to myself, you know, what is it? You can take two people side by side who are genetically very similar. I mean, let's face it, the whole entire human race is differentialed by 1% of their characteristics of their body. You know, we only slightly really look different than each other. So what is it then that makes it that one man and another man born on the exact same day could live two completely different lengths of lifespan?
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to think about that. Well, did this man really have that much worse habits than this man? No, probably most likely not. Everybody has a vice of some sort. We figured that out at this point in our life. you know, people who are germaphobes end up getting really, really sick because they're constantly wiping out natural bacteria and stuff that you need to keep your immune system strong. You know, when you factor all of these things together, it then becomes how they've lived in its entirety. And that's more, you know, the people who live longer, I think, focus more on longer life.
Oh, yeah, no, I certainly agree with you. I think a great example of what you're talking about is my husband's grandfather, who's, I mean, he's got to be close to 90. And he's probably not only the most positive person you'll ever meet, but he's one of the friendliest. He talks to everybody. Like, you know, if you go anywhere with him, you're probably going to be stuck there for 20 minutes while he's in a conversation with a random stranger. And he's active, like, still, you know, like, I mean, like, he's always out, he's always running around, you know, I mean, he has the, I think he has, you know, he has the energy of a 30-year-old, you know, and when I actually think about that, I always think about him, because I think about, like, that's somebody with a lot of that, you know, a causal presence that they're talking about, you know, is that, like, he's got it, you know, he's got, it's been a funny thing because, like, you know, at this point, I mean, he's lived longer than most of the family at this point, you know, honestly, they've all went quite a bit sooner, so it's kind of an unusual thing, too, but he's also and has been a vegetarian his entire life, so that might be it, too, I don't know.
I don't necessarily think I won't take that away because that's very possible that's part of the cause of it. But it sounds to me more like it is because he enjoys his life. I always think about life being kind of this snowball thing. At least it seems to be that way for me. I wonder, like, having watched my son when he was first, you know, coming up onto his knees and hands and moving around. And then as he started to move towards pulling himself up, it was just this slow buildup of speed, but it was this constant buildup of speed. I mean, to the point where he was even kind of, you know, starting to spin a little faster than he's actually moving along. That's the stage he's actually at right now. He's got so much energy, it's ridiculous. But what I've always thought about this was that if you keep it moving and you keep it moving fast, that it keeps going and gets stronger. So, and it's just something that, I don't know, I may touch on sometime here in the near future in a blog, talk about the importance of pushing forward vitality in every aspect of your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely important. No, it's true with kids. They reach this, and they start moving so fast. Around the time they're a toddler, you just, like my 3-year-old's like that. He doesn't slow down. Now, by the inverse, my 4-year-old daughter is like, has never been like that. Like, you know, like super hyper, ever. She we nicknamed her Sloth, which I know is mean, but I mean, like, she literally gets up and then goes and lays down on the couch. Like, trying to get her to go do anything is just, a feat. I don't know what it is. It's like she was born lazy. I mean, like, even as a baby, she was like that. Like, she didn't want to crawl. She wanted you to carry her. Like, you know, like, she's always been that way. I mean, you know, and, like, it's funny because, like, my sons especially, I mean, like, my 9-year-old's still like that. I mean, like, he's like, give me some of that, please, because I'm tired, you know, like, just little, because you guys are, I mean, like, they run all the time.
Right on, yeah, and they'll continue to do so. That's what the thing that I find most fascinating is, you know, I'm 35 now. I still feel like I'm 20. I mean, I have my aches and pains occasionally, but, I mean, I still, I'm up almost all the time, still got plenty of energy. It's only when I do something dumb, like get too drunk, that I'm slowed down really at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's I would certainly say that, like, especially since I lost the weight, which I'm a big believer in, that energy you're talking about. I really think that it works better in a healthier vessel, so to speak. I think that your causal presence, so to speak, goes up just by default the healthier you are. So,
well,
at least for me.
That's kind of exactly. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been, and that's one thing I will definitely say is that, you know, having been, like, really, really overweight to thin, like, my energy has just gone up the more weight I've lost.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, I know when I'm thinner, I have more energy, that's for sure. I'm actually being out of work for the past almost 6 months now or whatever it is kind of fattened me up. Not real bad, but I put on an extra 10 pounds for certain. But on the same point, like I said, Ed, I still don't feel like I am any slower than I ever was. I'm not feeling older yet. I know I'm getting gray. Kind of pisses me off, but...
I just dyed my hair, and that was, when my roots were coming up, I was like, I've got like 4 or 5 gray hairs. No, this can't stand. I'm too young for this.
Right on. Yeah, you're, just into your 30s, right?
Yeah, I'm 32, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're still young.
Yeah. I feel like I'm 16 half the time anymore, you know, so I'm sort of like, you know, it's very, very strange because that's one thing I'll say, that mentally, like, you know, I'm still young. It's just like, I don't know, physically sometimes I really get some kind of, you know, signs that I might not be as young as I think I am.
Hey, I got to pause for a minute and give a shout out to my boy Daniel Davies, the Danimal. He's come into our chat room. It's one of my buddies for a couple of years. I haven't really talked too heavily to the dude, but off and on, he used to frequent the Twisted Radio show. He also was involved in the United Order of Cerberus back in the day. One of the craziest cats I've ever met. At least he met.
Oh, cool.
Kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's from back in the day, eh?
it was just, he said it was just 1990. He's that old, is what he's saying. Just yesterday, it was 1990.
No, I missed all that because I haven't been around much. Yeah.
Right on. So, anyway, next week, we want to keep it open discussion or do we want to actually try to pick a topic? What is the date next week? I think that'd be an important thing there. The 30th of November.
Okay.
Your call. I've got a choice in subject matter.
We can keep it up in discussion if you want. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on with the Occupy movement and stuff that we could tackle.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep it open discussion next week. And I think maybe by then I'll have some commentaries done. I would like to eventually start kind of pushing forward some of my ideas of comparisons between Anton Long's writings and Gurdjieff's writings and kind of, let this be a platform for me to develop my thinking in my latest project, The Dark Horse. So.
I think that's a really good idea. That's why I was you know, it's one of the things that I liked about the Dark Horse thing was that, you know, like last week when we got into influence and memetics, and it sort of just kind of, you know, very much hit on the same exact point using the two different schools of thought. Yeah, I definitely want to do that because, so it's like I told you when it started this, is I wanted to do this to begin with because I am interested in the fourth way from, well, your perspective, honestly.
Right, right. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know that I necessarily practice what's traditionally known as the fourth way. I'm a fan of Gurdjieff's work, and it has its own tone over what these other would-be schools, even the ones that were relatively close to his you know, personal teachings. They seem to have their own little spin on it. I think that's an important thing to realize because a lot of Gurdjieff's whole kick was the mimetic aspect, the choice of influences. I mean, that it was important to him to see everything that was affecting his life right there in front of him, to be aware or hyper aware of, you know, the different influences, fields, currents, however you want to describe them, that kind of affect us on a daily basis, both on the interior and on the exterior. And so I think that in itself, when you give somebody the freedom to begin to choose what it is that they'll be influenced by, then with all that being the case, you can begin to kind of develop and go off on your own once you have these core ideas. And maybe, you know, maybe that was the whole point, but I disagree with most of their philosophies afterwards. I think they went way too tree-hugger for me. It's just never going to be that way in my mind. Life is a battle as far as I can tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting about Gurdjieff's stuff is that he sort of, I don't know, it was intimated that the way would be different for each person, you know, and that it would, you know, I can't remember exactly how it was put, that it would change for each person, which I always thought was a really interesting point that he makes right off the bat, because it's something that you actually don't see that sort of, I don't know, amendment sort of to a philosophy. There's a lot of it adhere to this because this is what the person said, period.
Right on. Well, we'll touch more on that next week during our open discussion or whatever, and then after that maybe we'll get a little more focused.
Yeah, that'll work.
All right. In the meantime, we've got just about a minute left. I wanted to make mention to everybody listening to the show that's either in the chat room or just listening through archive or whatever, to check us out this Friday night. It's usually our busiest edition. It's the Occupy Ooze edition. That's usually 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock?
It's 10 o'clock Eastern. And it's switched up a little bit, but yeah, that's what it is. It's we have four hosts right now, so yeah. I when you said it's busiest, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I wonder if it's because there's so many hosts or because so many people show up.
Right on. But with all that being said, we gotta go. So I'm gonna kick the outro.
All right.